Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 106 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we are talking about the Cyclocross World Championship that happened last weekend. As always, Scott Diedenbach and Mr. David Palin will be joining me for a They Don't Do That in Europe TDD TIE episode, and we're going to get right to that as soon as I tell you about Health IQ. Health IQ is a life insurance agency. What they are going to do is to get you lower rates on life insurance. They are going to look at who you are, what you do, how you live your life. And most of the people who are following Crosshairs Radio are cyclists. They want to be in shape. They believe in being fit and eating right, and these are things that Health IQ is looking at because they know you are going to be a better risk for them, and then they can give you lower rates on life insurance. We actually had a nice note from one of our viewers that they contacted across Health IQ by putting in healthiq.com/cxhairs. Filled out the quiz, qualified, talked to the folks at Health IQ, and got a great rate on life insurance. They did the whole thing. It worked. All of this that you hear me do every week actually worked, and it can work for you too. It's one of those things that you don't think you need, but it really is. It's a smart and mature way to live your life, to think about the future, to think about your loved ones. Go to healthiq.com/cxairs, fill out the survey, and get better rates on your life insurance. All right. We are also brought to you today by Endura, who are awesome Scottish company making the best clothing out there. We're going to talk a little bit about them again later in the program, but I do want to make sure that you all know that you can still go to endurasport.com, use the code WIDEANGLE20 and get 20% off on your order of the best kits, the best clothing and accessories out there. I do need to tell you one little disclaimer about that. It's only going to work for people who live in the U.S. This is a U.S.-based promotion. Sorry, everyone else that's listening. We're going to hook you up with some other cool stuff in the future. But for right now, for this Endura deal, only U.S. customers. So endurasport.com. WIDEANGLE20. Finally, and again, we're going to talk about this later in the show as well, but we'd love for you to be a member of the Wide Angle Podium podcast family. Go to wideanglepodium.com. $5 a month is as low as you can go, and up from there, we'd love your support to continue doing what we're doing. Okay, that's about it. Let's get to the show. Scott Diedenbach's going to start us out as he always does, and he's going to do that right now.
All right. You guys ready?
Yes. Let's do it.
All right. We're back for another edition. Let me start.
This is going to be the best intro ever.
You know he doesn't cut this stuff out.
I said another edition. Okay. We are back for another edition of TDDTIE. They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, on the left, Bill Shiken.
Hey, Scott. How are you doing today? How's everything in Michigan?
Everything is wonderful here. It's freezing cold. There's snow on the ground for Mountain Bike Nationals this coming weekend. It's going to be wonderful.
I'm waiting for my intro so I can tell you it's not Mountain Bike Nationals this weekend.
I'm sorry. I did it again. Fat Bike Nationals. Fat Bike Nationals this weekend. And on the right, Mr. David Palin. What's up, man?
Again, on the right, Mr. David Palin. Thank you. And it's great to be with you again today, Scotty D. And to this time be talking with Mr. Bill Shiken.
Yeah, this is like podcast marathon for you all. Just doubling up. We've been
podcasting since 8 a.m. So, hey, guys, we are going to talk about what happened this past week. Oh, World Championships. There was 5 good races we have to talk about, and I think we're probably going to get in pretty good detail. But first of all, before we do that, I would like to revisit our wonderful picks.
I knew we were going here.
Yeah. Would you do want to revisit? Revisit those, huh?
Because one of us got 4 out of 4. I'm not going to say who. We'll leave that, you know, we'll leave that in suspense. But one of us got 4 out of 4 picks.
4 out of 4. That's impressive.
I'm telling you. The real picks was Easerbeat and Wout, I think. You know, many people picked Richards, right? Many people picked Sonny Kant, but I think the Easerbeat and Wout picks were...
I was probably
very lucky. Don't get me wrong.
I must have been...
We were very lucky.
I'm pretty sure I picked Eevee, so I was probably 1 for 4.
You got one correct, and David got...
I got at least two.
David got two. And if you look at our podiums as a whole, and I only counted it correct if the pick was in the right spot. So if you picked someone for third and they got second, I still counted it as wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bill, you still got none right. You got one out of the 12 picks right with Evie Richards.
Yeah.
I got nothing other than the 4 winners right. Everything else I picked was
all
wrong.
All you need is the winner. That's fine. That's, you know. Yeah. Showing and placing, who cares?
You're right. And David got one of his second place picks right with Alvarado. And then that was it. So as a whole, I got 4 correct out of 12. David got 3. And Bill, you got 1.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
But it was awesome racing. So where do you guys want to start? Let's start with the junior men, right?
Junior
that
men.
Was the first race. Let's do them in order here. Junior men, top 5. We'll give the wide angle podium for the race there. In first place was Ben Tullett. In second place, Thomas Capecchi. In third place, Ryan Camp. Fourth place, Tom Linder. And in fifth place, say it, David.
I sure would, except I don't remember who was in fifth place.
Lane Meyer.
How could I forget? What a race Lane had, man.
That was amazing.
Lane. I'm kind of embarrassed here. He had an amazing race.
It was awesome. It was so awesome
leading the race for a while. I mean, it was worth getting up at 4:30 a.m. for.
Yes, it was.
Indeed,
absolutely.
It was. Yes, it was.
I was by myself watching it at the shop. No one else came for the 5 o'clock screening, and I was standing up in the shop by myself because I couldn't sit down watching it. Watching him. Do those laps, and it was outstanding. So congratulations to Lane Meyer. That was awesome. Do you want
even
go ahead, Bill?
No, I was just saying, sticking with Lane and the great race that he had, you know, and he said it was the best race or best race experience at least ever. And if you look what he was doing, he had a guy that we saw winning races all year long, basically breathing down his neck for the end of that race, and had to outsprint him at the end. It was Pim Ronar. I mean, that's a guy we were looking at who could possibly win this going away. Just such a fantastic. And, you know, it has to be a little bit of redemption for Lane just after the disappointments at Nationals and at Pan Ams, to just have that kind of performance, get on the wide angle podium, fifth place in the world. It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
And he had a realistic run at the narrower podium at that.
Yeah. No, he was looking at third the whole time, and, you know, just had that rush of guys at near the end that got by him. But within, you look at it, this may have been the closest race we saw. I mean, the winner, you know, Ben Tullett's coming in at 41:19, and Pim Ronar in sixth place is 41:55. That's a 30-second gap between first and sixth. That's pretty impressive.
No, yeah, I agree.
It's nothing that we saw in any of the higher level racing.
No. Everything else was pretty much, you know, 1 and 2, and that's all we were looking at.
Just quickly, the other Americans in the race in 13th place was Scott Funston.
Another great, after his race at Nationals, second place in Nationals, great race for Scott, yeah.
Yep. In 22nd was Sam Noel, also cool.
Representing the good folks from Cannondale really well out there. They should all be proud.
31st place was Calderwood. 38th place was Ben Gomez Villafana.
Or
Villafana.
Villafana. Sorry, Scott. And I'm waiting for the results for Alex was in 43rd place, Alex Morton. So, guys, you want me to? I got to tell the story that I just told you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just got done talking to Alex. And as people know, Alex did not race at Nationals. He had a separated shoulder. And he was not completely healed for Worlds. He did that race. First of all, Alex is the only 17-year-old U.S. rider on the team. All the rest of them are 18. But he did that race with a shoulder brace still on, like a splint kind of thing that lets him hold the handlebars still on that crazy, ridiculous course. So nothing to be ashamed of there for sure. He will be back strong next year. You can believe that. And he'll be something to see for sure. So
yeah.
And there we go. That's the American field. Anybody else in the junior field that you guys saw? Tullett, I mean, great ride for him. He's also a first year. It's going to be kind of cool because we're going to get to see the junior rainbow jersey next year, maybe.
Yeah.
We usually don't get to see that because it's usually won by an 18-year-old, so we don't get to see it the following year. But this year, we actually will, so that will be kind of cool.
Yeah, one up in his brother from last year.
That's right.
Like second in that GBR sweep, you know, coming away with the win. I know Ben was disappointed, especially after winning Pan Am and winning Nationals. And I think that we saw this in here. And I don't, you know, people just having a bad day, you know? It wasn't anything, wasn't flats, been... wasn't mechanicals, just having a bad day. And they're going to jump up and get you when you don't want it always, you know? I mean, that's just one of the things. It's part of the racing, you know, so...
That's why it's cyclocross.
Yeah.
It's why we love it. Yeah, it's the things can just happen, and sometimes
and
it
that's
just,
even some foreshadowing for some later racing, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can do everything right, and stuff can still go bad for you. So
this was this first race that we saw, this may have been the messiest race as far as slickest conditions.
You might be right. It actually might have gotten a little better after this.
My comment while watching this race and watching Tomas Kopecky, who ended up coming back and getting second place, is that he was really strong. I felt like he needed an upgrade in his toe spikes. Like every time you saw him running, especially on those off camber sections, he was just like sliding down the hill. And it was like, wasn't even on the bike where I think he was losing it. It's like he cannot keep up with those guys. And his footwear just was not doing him any favors when he was trying to run on that course. And they had this sort of ice. It was, you know, icy, but then melting. And really no one was getting any grip, especially off the bike when they were riding for that junior race.
Yeah,
was it Kopecky that went down on that right-hand sweeper and out under the bottom of the barriers?
I believe that was him, yeah. So super strong, and he had won some races this year. So, you know, definitely one of the favorites as well. But, yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that was it.
Okay.
I was just looking down here if there's anybody else we're missing who we had been seeing up near the front. That was a surprise.
Hey, give me the lowdown, Bill, if you know Witz Mewson. Is that any relation?
I don't know. I saw that name too. I don't know. I'm sure isn't everybody seems to be related there. Another Mason.
So it could be into the brother derby that we're putting together for later on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go. All right. Well, I think that's we covered the juniors. We did not make picks for the juniors, so we will move on to the next race of the day. Was the U23 women's race. As most people, I think, in all the polls I saw, Evie Richards was hands down the favorite pick in this race. And she goes away and wins it pretty handedly. So in first place was Evie Richards. In second place, Celine Del Carmen Alvarado. In third place, Nadja Heigl. In fourth place, Harriet Harnden. And in fifth place, Fleur Nagengast, I believe is how her name is pronounced. So, she basically just rode away from everyone. What do you guys think about Evie Richards' performance?
Well, she even had time mid-race to do high cadence drills.
Oh,
She did have that mechanical. We talked about it a little bit this morning on Bike Shop CX. Stuck her in that low gear, but, you know, she only lost, I think it was like seven seconds.
7 seconds, yeah.
I mean, on that course, you know, how far down the cassette are you actually shifting anyways, right? I mean, so to be stuck in that.
Her RPMs were so high.
Oh, yeah, but she also had a lot of running sections, and, yeah there was even a few spots where it cost her, but, I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
No,
right?
we were joking that it truly was that mountain bike training that her,
yeah,
had her okay.
And I heard
she were doing that.
Got her into the granny gear one too many times.
Yeah.
But ultimately, she, you know, everything in all seriousness, she was really smooth, even at that crazy high cadence.
Oh, yeah.
True.
Yeah. You know, you look at, again, she was looked at as a favorite in this race coming in, and rightfully so. And she had only raced, I believe, three times before. She did a DVV race that she ended up maybe top 20, and then got into, and then raced first World Cup race. Was that Namur? And, and ended up winning. In the elites, not even,
right.
You know, there is no U23 women's race. So in the elites, won that. Next goes to Hoeger Heide, gets on the podium, is in third. So obviously the going away is going to be the favorite in there. But, you know, Laura Van Derenschot was in here. We didn't mention Emma White, who was a U.S. favorite and really came in there looking super strong, ended up seventh. Nobody really after about, not a great start for Richards. You know, she got caught back. There was actually stuck behind her teammate for a little while, and then finally made her way around and then just went straight to the front and never looked back until she had that cadence issue. One of the, what I thought was a really cool part of the race was she was taking this super fast descent into this off camber, and you could see the mountain bike skills in that she was her, you know,
sternum to saddle.
Her backside was basically on her rear wheel, much like a mountain biker would, you know, and all the comments being, wow, she really needs a dropper post because her stomach was basically on her saddle as she's coming around there. And you could tell the difference that made. I mean, everybody else is, if you watch that race, you can see the difference in mountain bike versus not mountain bike technique in that everybody else is coming off the front of the saddle. They're basically putting their weight closer to the front of the bike and digging that front wheel into the rut and slowing down. Their momentum isn't able to keep them around there. She is off the back, has her left leg out of the pedal and is kick pushing herself around, basically, you know, outriggering to give her momentum around there and just flying around these sections. And you have to figure just there alone, she's picking up 3-4 seconds each time she's come through there, and that led to this huge almost a minute by the end, you know, only racing 38 minutes, and then she had almost a full minute by the end of the race.
Yeah, just under 38 minutes for the time. The next Alvarado was 38:30,
which for you, so. Good call all year long. She was,
I'm
your
telling
pick.
You. Yeah. She's, you know, 20-year-old racing age. She's 19. There'll be a lot more to come from her for sure. That's exciting to see. What were you going to say, David?
I was going to say that with that low line that Evie Richards kept taking, did you notice when they got to the end of that, where there's almost that ramp up at that bottom of the rut on the bottom line? For so many people, it ended almost with a blow to the front wheel that threw people off their bikes. But
yeah,
Evie
in
Richards
that same
managed
section
to,
there?
In the same section, right at the end of that section, bottom section of it, Evie Richards does manage to stay on the bike and ride that or kick through it or whatever it is. And in other cases, you'll see that she's the one that's got both feet in the pedals on some of these crazy off cambers when other people are feeling like they need to go with the outriggers and, you know, take one foot out for balance and for staying upright. Her skills just really put her in a spot head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, it's what we talked about last week, you know, unfortunately, because of the circumstances with Yolanda Neff and Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, that we'd love to see it, even more of these professional cross-country mountain bikers race cross, because as we saw with Evie, they just bring a different level and outlook on what skills can be, you know, can go from one sport to the other, and how it looks a little different, but is definitely effective. So, you know, we'd love to see even more of that crossover, because it certainly was fun to watch in this race. The other thing I did want to mention, speaking of the teammate that she went around.
I was getting there too, Bill. I agree with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, because we talked about Tom Linder, and we talked about Rohar, and for that matter, Ben Tullett. These people coming in the men's junior race at 17 years old. Here you have Harriet Harnden in the women's U23 race at 17 years old.
And I think that's racing age 17.
Yeah, right. Actually, I think she is actually 16. I think you're right. Battling it out right until almost the very, very end with the top of that sport.
Yeah, she, you know, of course, when you put it out there on Twitter, you're like, who is this? And she's amazing. Then, of course, you get the well actuallys and people telling you all of the results that she had. And she did well in nationals and all this kind of stuff, which, you know, we're not necessarily following all of the junior women out there. But, oh, she was so much fun to watch.
At age 16, she's 20 seconds off the podium.
Yeah.
U23 podium. That's just great. That's so awesome. So, yeah.
I mean, think of any sport that we were, or anything we were involved in at 16 years old, to be competing with college age people.
Right, right.
And at that level, amazing. Yep. Great job. Big call out to Harriet Harnden. Sorry to step on your toes there, Bill. I knew what you were thinking.
No, yeah. they're really big and easy to step on. Clara Hansinger, 14th for the U.S., also a good result there.
We haven't given the American women,
I was only going to say that because worth mentioning, because we see her race in the U.S. a lot as well, as Ruby West for Canada, 21st, so nice effort from her. But, yeah, why don't you give the rest of the Americans?
Yeah, as we mentioned, Emma White in 7th, of course. Clara Hansinger was in 14th. Emma Schwartz in 20th. Katie Klaus in 25th, also 17 years old. So, you know, she's going to be something to see. Hannah Ahrensman in 30th and Laurel Rathburn in 39th. So there we go. All right. Anything else? U23 women. That was our second race of the day. It was awesome to see.
One other thing I just want to mention about this race, and it is, We talk about things in the sport that may make it a more global sport and a universal sport and even more competitive sport. Look at the nationalities for the top 10 in this race. In 10th place, Laura Verdonschot is your first Belgian.
Yes.
First Belgian.
And the only one in the top 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So here comes the question. That.
Yeah.
So that brings me to question. Now, certainly, maybe different because we're looking at the women here, and traditionally, Belgian women aren't where they put their, or the Belgians don't put it as much in their women racing.
True.
But in general, are we going to see, because if you look at the men's, similarly spread throughout the nationalities, in the smaller or the younger groupings. Is it that the Belgians and the Dutch stay with it longer, and therefore they rise to the top?
Or they, for some reason, they're not, because we've seen it in the past. I mean, you know, I think one we'll talk about coming up is, you know, we can remember back a couple of years ago when everybody was super disappointed that Gage Heck didn't win the juniors, right?
Right.
And that's an American racer in there. And then it seems as you move up, for whatever reason, those Belgians are getting faster and everybody else is just kind of staying at their same rate of progression. But here, even the Dutch women that we're looking at in this U23, that's normally where the country that does excel. And they do have two in the top five. You know, you got Celine, not Canadian. Yeah. And Floor. So
yep.
So still doing all right. But yeah, I mean, you got Great Britain in first and fourth. You have Austria in third. You have Italy in sixth. U.S. in seventh. Czech Republic in ninth. So really just, you know, a nice, again, maybe this is our hope. This is where cyclocross finally becomes this global sport, is on the women's side. And we're already seeing the more competitive races. Maybe it's the one that catches more of the world's attention as well.
So you think we'll be seeing those flags as randomly placed as they were in the finishing photos from the world?
That was crazy. Yeah.
Well, I agree with what you guys said, and I think it was one of the best points that Simon Burney made in the entire broadcast was when he was talking about, we've seen the same thing in the younger French men riders, that they have they get some good high finishes at Worlds, but then it doesn't translate up into the elites for some reason.
Right.
And so we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens. This group of women that are in the U23 is an incredible group, and we'll see what happens. It'd be great to see all these riders just slowly transition into the elites and make that even more competitive than it is. So. All right. Yeah, I think sometimes just for some countries, it just doesn't translate into the elites, but we'll see. So. All right. Anything else? U23 women. We cover all that.
I do have another thought on that. Just as we move forward, I think that this is an area as well that non-Olympic sport kind of hurts it.
Yes.
So
good point.
You have in the Belgian Federation an incentive, since all of the races, all of the series, all of the money, all of the sponsors really are located in their home country, there is still an incentive to later in these racers' careers continue to fund their racing in cyclocross.
Right. Where that's a
most
great point.
Other federations, including our own, that is going to be pushed aside because it's not an Olympic sport. It's not there. That's your Olympic, committees and federations aren't going to be supporting that. And, you know, it's why we look at somebody like Vanderpool and why he's probably switching over to mountain bike, because as opposed to road, that's where he can excel in the Olympics, and that's where the money's going. So that's I think, where opposed to Belgium and a little bit, you know, less in the Netherlands, the money is still there to support cyclocross and cyclocross athletes where it isn't anywhere else in the world.
And yes. As much as I like to bash, and I know you're not, and I'm pointing this out because I want to make it clear that none of us are, as much as I do like to bash USA Cycling on whatever little picayune things I like to jump on them about, when it comes to the real accent on Olympic-based sports, that is what they're there for. And when there is budgetary issues, ultimately, Olympic sports are going to win. It's just kind of the way it is.
Well, I.
What are you trying to say, Bill?
You can go.
Bill is going to get it out the first time ever.
If you go to cxairs.com, you can read my thoughts on that on the post I did on the national team about a month ago. And bottom line, I think it's amazing that they've found this money to be able to fund cycling athletes, and that they're sharing some of that funding with the Olympic Committee. My issue with it is that cyclocross athletes are treated a step below. You know, it's kind of genuinely, and then a little, maybe 97% genuinely and 3% sort of snarkily, I tweeted out there, congratulations to Katie Compton for reaching gold level status on the new USA Cycling national team by, you know, getting on a podium at Worlds, which was one of their criteria. The 3% snarky part of that is that by getting gold status, she's treated as a bronze status if she compared to every other sport. Otherwise, she does not get the $25,000 stipend per year that a road cyclist would get for podiuming at Worlds. She does not get access to coaching and training and facilities at the U.S. Olympic Committee that a gold status athlete would get. You know, she basically just gets, I don't know.
Yeah, that's not the same
support. And here's the thing, David, is that for that program, it is $1 million that has gone into that program. 500,000 of it comes from the U.S. Olympic Committee that was matched by $500,000 from USA Cycling.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that that USA Cycling money then cannot go? Some of that cannot be earmarked for cyclocross athletes. Fine. The U.S. Olympic Committee money can't be? Fine. Why can't some of the matching funds on the other side bump that up a little bit?
It's funny because, Bill, I usually am the guy that, and sometimes,
I love
Scott,
USA
to some degree.
Cycling. I am friends with many people there.
No, that's not where I'm going. I'm going somewhere different okay. with this one. Is I'm the guy that's like, why do we still watch football on Sundays and not have USA Cycling cross? Because it makes so much sense and this and that. And you bring me back to reality of, you know, come on, David, this is a real world. And when we talk about screen and screen, and you point out that that's Belgium, it's really Belgian centric. And this is the reality. I can't get around, and I agree with your point, but when McDonald's and Coca-Cola are backing cyclocross the way they are now backing the Olympics, then I think we'll see more money and more prestige given to cyclocross.
I think that it should be an Olympic sport. I didn't think that before. Before seeing all this with the national team, before seeing the inequality that is out there and that is always going to be out there, and unless the Olympics go away, that's not going to change. You know, I say that, yes, since you're matching funds, there should be money coming from the other side. But in the end, the way that it's going to be equal is you make cyclocross an Olympic sport. And for the longest time, I was against this. I just felt, you know, it would take something away from the sport, and, you know, we don't need it. But as if I want to be, you know, American centric in this, heck yeah, let's do it. Let's make it a winter sport. And then that allows our athletes to get the funding that these other, you know, cycling athletes get, and then maybe puts them on an equal footing on the world stage.
At least more of an equal footing.
Yeah. Well, it'll be the same for other countries as well. Because, you know, like we just said.
Right. Okay, anything else you guys
want to
talk about?
World problem solved. What's next?
All right, well, let's give the top five for the next race of the day was the elite women. That was kind of a good race.
Aren't we doing the U23 men? Or are we going to go?
Well, that was the next day. We were doing them in order.
You're going in order. You're so organized here. Okay, I'm going to switch screens.
I have the tabs of my browser in order already.
I am sorry for even questioning it.
Just clicking through, baby. All right, so for elite women, first place, Sané Kant. Second place, Katie Compton. Third place, Lucinda Brand. Fourth place, Christine Majerus. Fifth place, Elizabeth Brandau. Guys, for me, there was basically two really good battles. We had the Compton-Kant battle, of course, for first place, which was just epic and will go down in the annals of the elite world championship for sure. But then we also had the Brandon Majerus battle, right, for third place. I thought that was really good, too. And I remember thinking, man, whichever one of these two ends up in third is going to really be one of the rides that we talk about and one of the people we talk about having a really great ride at Worlds. And, of course, Lucinda Brand gets that. The other thing is, when you look at these, you know, Katie Compton's on the podium with two riders that are 12 years younger than her.
Yeah.
What an incredible performance. But so for the Sané Kant, Katie Compton battle, what did you guys think? What was the deciding factor? For me, I think it comes down to the last lap, I think. And I think Katie Compton said this too. Kant had more on the last lap than Compton did. And that's where she basically won the race. What do you guys think? Bill, go ahead.
Well, I think that is the result of, maybe you guys already talked about it in Bike Shop CX, but I think it came down to the pits and the placement of the pits. And I think Mark Legg said the same, that they chose, you know, there are a number of factors for why they chose where they were. One of them being that it was never an issue when Valkenburg was dry. For then they had sort of picked the same spot. But the run that Katie had to make before that last lap, they basically said just overtaxed her lungs and just, you know, really that was kind of the last straw for her. And that's when Kant was able to, you look at her like right after that pit exchange is when she really is able to open that lead and sort of take over the race.
And you're talking about when she had to run through the pit lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Just that uphill run through the mud.
That was a wicked pit right there. Oh my God. That was just looked so tough. Yeah. She couldn't ride it. And had to run into that pit to get her bike. So, and then I agree with you. And then after that, she wasn't quite the same on that, the rest of that lap. So, David, any thoughts?
I had the same thought. It came down to the running, really.
Yeah.
I think that where Compton, especially earlier in the race, when she was managing to stay on her bike and Kant was dismounting earlier and running more, that helped Katie build an advantage. And then by the end, when it came down to who had to run that much more, it cost Katie. It just did.
Yeah, yeah. Other people, let's go through the Americans in that race. Of course, we had Katie Compton in second. We had Katie Keough in sixth. Ellie Anderson in eighth. That's three Americans in the top 10, guys. That is awesome. Rolling down. Then we had Courtney McFadden in 26th.
Katarina Nash in 12th.
Ellen Noble in 32nd. And was that it? That was it, right? I feel like I missed someone. Did I look over someone?
I don't know. Help me, guys. I'm looking. I think that was it.
Yeah, Courtney. Rebecca Farringer in 28th. Courtney, 26. Rebecca Farringer, 28th. Ellen Noble, 32. So there we go. Yeah, three Americans. You know, we were talking a lot about who had great rides. I got to put Ellie Anderson's ride getting eighth place as one of the best rides of the weekend. Thoughts?
Yeah. No, I thought, you know, I think that she really had a great race and probably one of her best races of the year in World Championship. So that's definitely a place to pull that one out. The one I wanted to kind of mention, and we're moving off of Americans, was Elizabeth Brandau in fifth.
German. Yeah. Yeah.
Where did she come from?
Germany, I believe.
She did come from Germany. And she also came from the 39th ranked rider in the world this year. You know,
in a name that we have not called,
below,
I don't think, ever.
Below, like, Ruby West.
Yeah.
We saw in the U23 race. Just an amazing ride by her. Just pulled something out of, I don't know from where. I mean, that was just crazy.
Yeah, totally,
out,
totally
know, taking
agree.
Taking a beating out over... Katie Keough on that one. I do want to, just since we were on, I just was searching for through Twitter for what Mark Legg had to say about Katie's pit box.
Jersey.
No, pit box.
Oh, I thought you were going to say about her jersey. We'll talk about jersey in a second.
Go
ahead.
But as far as the pit goes, pit one box selection was better for Belgium. Our box selection caused Katie to overstress her lungs. Lesson learned on mud course at Valkenburg when our previous experiences were dry races. We selected the box, worked okay for pit two, but it was part of the Jenga puzzle.
Yeah. And by Jenga puzzle, he's meaning all the things you have to think about, I think, when you make a pit lane selection.
Yeah. Especially, you know, even for the, you know, that we've talked about in the past, even you have to take in part of the team is not just a racer, but it's the mechanics as well. If you're stuck in a box that's, you know, all the way on the other side of the power washers, that's going to be a crucial factor as well.
Yes, indeed. For sure. For sure.
And we'll be talking about power washers, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah, because what happened to the power washers that day? Does anybody know?
No.
I haven't talked to Mark. I got to talk. Did you see? There was the camera flashed by, and they were washing bikes with brushes buckets. And buckets.
Oh, so they were even having, so that wasn't even. But yeah. I guess so. Choosing the pit box is may be based on that decision yet and actually not come into play if you don't have to.
I think they had them, but they went out at some point.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have them. Yeah. I mean, that.
Right. Yeah. Because when I talked to Alex Morton for the junior race, he said they were working for his race. At the beginning of the day. So something happened during the day at some point. I don't know how, if it was temporary, if they were off all the rest of the day or what, but let's get on to Jersey too, Bill. What was the deal with Katie's jersey?
It was not her trade team kit. That's what people were complaining that she was wearing her national champion kit, where you're supposed to be wearing your federation kit, which is true, and which it was a different design than the rest of the team, but it wasn't like they were trying to fly in the face of the UCI. It happened actually. It was just a screw up. It was a screw up from the USA Cycling team manager gave her the wrong kit, and you know at that point. You got to wear what you have. So,
right.
Turns out
it's not like you can call in Dora or something and just get a jersey.
It turns out that they were fined for it, double fines at the World Championships.
USA Cycling offer is going to pay.
Yeah.
Right?
That USA Cycling. It said that, hey, our fault, and we're paying the fine. So there it is. You're really, in the end, not that big of a deal. But yeah, Dave, you did mention that, you know, speaking of kits, that maybe USA Cycling should just have Endura kits, and then they won't have this issue anymore, because we know at those fine folks at Endura Sport are yes. producing some of the best kits.
And I'll tell you
kits.
What.
And some of the
if
best.
Keith,
yeah.
Go ahead. If Keith Bouchard Hall would give me a call, I would tell him he could use Wide Angle 20 because he's based here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And he could get 20% discount on kits.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, sponsor. It's funny you say that since Endura is a sponsor of the Wide Angle Podium and also of this show as well as Bike Shop CX. And as part of that sponsorship, they are giving our listeners and our viewers a deal on getting 20% off of anything in the store at Endura Sport. I talked a couple of weeks ago about how I got these mountain bike shorts, which I absolutely love. And you can do the same, only though if you're in the U.S. That is the one stipulation about Endura, that they are giving this deal only to our U.S. viewers and listeners. I'm sorry for all of you who are not in the U.S. We'll make it up to you in some other way. But if you're in the U.S., go to Endura Sport. Type in when you're checking out Wide Angle 20. What is it?
Wide Angle 20.
And you'll get 20% off of your order. These are the one thing I noticed when I got these shorts was just how well they were made, how sturdy they are. You know, this is like a clothing that is built to endure the harshest conditions. These clothes for the pro teams and the movie star team and everything else, and they're not, you know, unless they're sliding across the asphalt, these things are not falling apart. They're gonna last you a long time. They're good quality, good comfy chamois in there, and worth your time. So if you're looking for any accessories, looking for some gloves or anything, arm warmers, tights, kits, go to Endura Sport and type in Wide Angle 20, and it will help them and it will help us and the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network.
Yeah, I got a pair of the pants. Same experience, Bill. They are just, you know, you immediately, as soon as you take them out of the package, you see the quality right there, you know, and it's just amazing stuff. I'm very happy with the pants that I got. Hoping to wear them as pit pants next year, and I think they'll be awesome. And
did
when
they
you do
have
order
star pants,
They did not have space pants, but space that's pants, okay, because I'm not wearing. Gonna wear
but I think
space
you can
pants,
do custom. But, you know, not maybe not with yeah. the wide angle 20 discount, but you can get your whole team on in,
sure.
In Endura sure. and get your own yes. space pants.
And when you use the wide angle podium discount code, it's all the way at the end. Just keep going. Trust it. It will show up. And when you enter the code at almost at the very end, and yeah, and then you get your 20% off. So worked like a dream. So excellent. I'm very excited about them, and it's just great stuff. So we are very happy to have them as a sponsor of all the wide angle podium shows.
Smooth. Even those folks over at Slow Ride, they're even going to be so generous as to help those guys out too, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they need yeah, all the well, help they can get.
I was yeah. just going to say that. I mean, it's just obvious. They need all the help they can get. So, okay. Any, what else do we want to talk about with the women's elite women's result? Let's talk about riders that we were all talking about going into the race. And then kind of we didn't really see a lot. Like one of the ones that jumps right to mind is Mariana Voss. She gets an 18th place, still top 20, you know. But, you know, people were picking her on the podium, top five. And it just kind of did not pan out for her.
I think that in the past we've seen Mariana Voss is a an engine, not a motor, an engine, and can just and that's her strength is just the ability to ride anybody off of her wheel, be the most powerful rider out there. She has great skills, but I think at this point, and especially with her not racing a lot of cross, not racing mountain bikes, maybe some of these other riders' skills, especially on a technical course like they were dealing with in Valkenburg, were better than she was. And I think that that's mm-hmm. one of the things that showed on this day.
Yeah, I would agree. And another rider is PFP. She gets 24th. A lot of us were talking about her potential podium spot. Didn't pan out, but again,
her crash took yeah. a little more out of her.
yeah,
than,
I was yeah. just gonna say the week before she like basically aired it out from 10 feet and landed on her ribs. So, you know, who knows how much of that? What were the lasting effects of that? So, anyone else you guys can think of that? That you'd like to mention in this race?
Mention Helen Wyman there. I don't know if that's where you were going, Scott, but
no, go
Helen
ahead.
Wyman, I really expected, not by any means disappointing in her finish. She had a great race out there, but I really thought that a running course as muddy as this one was going to favor Helen.
Yeah, that's true. There was a lot of predictions that she was going to do better than, I mean, she was 13th, nothing shabby there at all.
Exactly.
But there was a lot of predictions that she was going to be up in the single digits, maybe top five, potentially because of all the running. And I don't think we haven't really given due to Katie Keough. Sixth place.
Yeah.
You know, what a season for Katie Keough. I mean, we just see her getting better and better and better every single year. This year, you know, second place in the World Cup Series, sixth place at Worlds, second place at U.S. Nationals. She's the real deal, and she's just so much fun to watch and makes the races so much more exciting for me, at least. So got to give a big shout out for her, too. So. All right. Anything else? Elite women. What else do you guys want to talk about?
I don't think that we have stressed enough just how exciting this race was. And how it's one of those, if you can find a replay of this race out of any that happened over the weekend, this is the one that you want to go watch. I mean, I was like, beside myself granted, we all, you know, I think all of us, at least on this show, are you know, just doing all we can to cheer on Katie Compton to try to get this win. And oh my goodness, such a close race, especially from the beginning. We're all worried about Katie's starts always. You know, she gets there and she's probably what, like 10th back for the first lap or so. And slowly just working her way towards the front. We're like, all right. And it was right back to like the Svenness video. It was right back to the Jaws thing. She just started working her way. And then all of a sudden, you know, there she is right on Kahn's wheel and then going ahead, getting an 8-second lead at one point over Kahn. And now is just so much drama in that race and then losing it back again, then holding on to second. Ah, just... Just such a great race. If you haven't seen this one, I don't care if you're like, hey, you're spoiling it. It doesn't matter.
It's still, no, you will still be on the edge of your seat.
You're still going to be watching and going, I think she's going to do it. I know she doesn't, but I think she might pull this out.
I think she might win it this time.
Wasn't it Milton Keynes where they sprinted at the end?
Yes.
And it was a muddy race. It kind of, sort of a similar drama to that. You know, that was when Sané was still trying to prove herself. And now, obviously, she's the top. So, you know, really nice comments from Sané Khan after the race, you know, talking, one, giving all the credit to Compton and just talking. You know, in the past, she's talked about having interlopers in the sport. You know, take that for what you want. You know, people coming in just late in the season, not racing the whole time, and then winning a world championship. You know, she basically praised Katie for being a cyclocross racer and racing the whole season and being going head to head, you know, basically those two battling each other all season long, which made it for a more meaningful win in the end. And then the other thing that she said, which I love, and I think you know, all of us are just as well, not you, Scott, but David and I are just as guilty of it. We're like, well, this really isn't a race for her. You know, she's more, when they're really difficult conditions and muddy conditions like this and hilly, it's not necessarily a Sané Khan course. And she said, I'm glad that I was able to show people that I can do this too.
Yeah. I think it's really, that's one thing, but we need to make sure we give praise to Sané Khan, because she rode a great race. She's shown us race after race this season and last, that she's getting smarter and smarter and smarter. She's not just, you know, this really strong, you know, rider who doesn't make really good decisions as well in a race. She's the complete package. I think winning this year helped just put a, you know, stamp on her, you know, her being the best in the world. I think last year, you know, a lot of people were like, well, if Voss doesn't drop her chain, who knows what happens, blah, 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 which I think was ridiculous. But by winning it again this year, it's just Sané Khan is the deserved women's elite champion in cyclocross this year. And Katie Compton just had a great battle. And it was everything you said it was, Bill. But I think we do have to give props to Sané Khan for just, you know, showing that she is a legit all around cyclocross racer and a great champion. So
all that,
all right, David.
And
go ahead.
I had the luxury of watching this at Fraser Bicycle here in Ann Arbor. And with us was Frank and Christine, who are Belgian. So we had all the excitement of cheering on together for Sané Khan and Katie Compton. And they were over the moon with that race for third, fourth place to see Lucinda Brand come out and take it to Christine Majerus. I know I just said they're from Belgium. They're actually Dutch. And they were so excited with Lucinda Brand's performance there. That made it worth it all right there. Yep. What a great race we had.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, you know, want to give a little shout out to Carolyn Monnier as well. You know, wasn't able to race before that, was sick, you know, was not the season she wanted, losing the sponsorship, not being fully sponsored, you know, just the ups and downs all year, and coming in and getting 10th is, I think, a pretty great race for her.
I agree. I'm glad you mentioned her, because that's definitely deserved too. So, all right. Well, that ended the first day. That ended the Saturday racing at Worlds. We all were like taking I think you tweeted out, Bill, that the 4 a.m. wake up was starting to catch up with you at some point during the day on Saturday.
which I thought,
it did for a lot of us.
I know, which I thought back later and I was like, The funny thing, and I think why I was feeling it so much more, was just because I was purely a spectator, where, you know, working races every weekend, especially announcing, and you have your first race at 8 a.m. If the race isn't in your backyard, you're waking up at that time anyway to go out. But I just, you know, I never really feel it until I get home at 8 o'clock at night. But this was like, whoo, I'm done after having to cheer for all these races.
And then, the roller coaster of the women's race. you know, I was on my feet for that entire last lap. I couldn't even sit down watching it. So, yeah, it was very draining. But we come in the next morning with the U23 men. So results for the U23 men: in first place was Eli Easerbeet. Second place, Joris Nieuwenhuis. In third place, Jan Gross. In fourth place, Adam Tupalik. In fifth place, Thies Aerts. Eli Easerbeet, you know, we heard a lot about Thomas Pidcock in this race, if you watched the broadcast, but he basically, you know, he just didn't have a good race, right? I mean, they showed him a couple times on the course, and, you know, he was hitting roots or hitting, ruts and stop, you know, losing all of his momentum, having to regain it. You could just see it in his face. He was getting frustrated. He did not have a great start again like he did at the last World Cup. So I think he was frustrated with that. And you could just kind of see that frustration building with him race long.
Even
and
post race, in not mincing any words, in very colorful language, pretty much saying he shouldn't have even shown up.
Which, you know, I don't know that that's true. He's still got
way too hard right. on himself. But the frustration definitely was coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. So Eli Easerbeet pretty handedly wins by like 28 seconds and rode a great race. Solid race from him. You know, he had the fewest mistakes, I think, you know. Smart race, did what he had to do, and got the win. So I know he was happy with that, and that was good to see because he was my pick. So for the Americans in the U23, top American was ninth placed Gage Hecht. And then the next one was, 29th place was Grant Elwood. In 34th place was Spencer Petroff. In 36th place was Denzel Stevenson. And in 39th place was Max Chance. Did we have anyone after that?
Let's see. We got Eric Bruner was a DNF.
Oh, yeah. He DNF'd. Yeah. That's right. That's right. So was there anyone else you wanted to mention in that one?
In the race?
Any Canadians that you want to mention is what I'm thinking.
No.
We have our 7 degrees of or 6 degrees of Canadian bacon that we have to get to. Yeah.
No Canadians I can see even in this race.
I don't think.
What's going on, Canada? Right.
Come on. Let's get some U23 men in there.
Yeah.
All right. But anything else in general that you want to talk about for the U23 men?
Yes.
4 French in the top 20.
Boom.
Yeah.
French team's not one that I usually think of as a cyclocross powerhouse. I mean, yeah, we have year on year. But
in the U23 men, they usually have
year.
A strong
last
showing.
Year they had
a
podium as well.
Yeah. So go ahead, Bill.
Oh, no, yeah, that was definitely Jan Gross, definitely, I think, the surprise ride that we saw. It's interesting in this field that we see some names that it seems like we've been seeing forever. Adam Tupalik was up there a lot, ended up fourth. The thing that sort of struck me during the women's U23 race was watching it on the UCI feed, actually the NBC feed, but still it was Anthony McCrossin and Simon Burney. As a side note, I thought those guys were great, and I love, you know, we've talked about it before that doing a one person booth is near impossible. You're gonna say things that are just nonsensical because you have to keep talking and you're talking to yourself hour after hour, and it's just right. It's just not natural. Having Simon in there was huge. He brings a lot of knowledge. They get a little GBR centric every once in a while, but that's you know, to be understood. They're you know, cheering for their guys as well, even though they're not supposed to be. But you know, that's going to come out, and that's fine.
And in their defense, Pidcock was one of the favorites too.
Yeah.
It's not like he was just some random GBR rider, right?
No,
more people picked him to win than anyone else. I can excuse them for that.
Wout or Vanderpool down there in the men's race, they're doing the same thing. You know, it's the exact same thing. It's the same thing that you know we got. criticism for 2 years ago in Hartford for talking about Jeremy Powers being way back. They're like, oh, they're just always talking about Powers. I was like, well, he was the four-time national championship, you know, and he wasn't. And this was the right. first time he wasn't. It's worth mentioning. Right. But hey,
yes,
people's job is to complain. That's why we are born. Here was the thing that I found interesting in that broadcast for the U23 women's race. You have Evie Richards. Evie Richards won a world championship in this field when she was still, you know, more junior age, but it was the first time ever racing cyclocross outside of the UK. Wins a world championship, got third last year at Beals, comes back and wins again. And, you know, Simon saying that everybody else in their commentary area, the other, you know, countries, I'm assuming this is going to be like Belgium, are asking the commentators, why is Evie still racing in that race? Why isn't she racing in the elite race? And
right.
One, I think she's still young, and that's where she can be racing, even though she's had success in the elite level. Why not continue to race there? But the thing that I just wanted them that I was, if I could like reach through my TV or my computer and say, tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, go ask those guys why Ellie Easerbeat's still racing in this field. That's what I would do, because it was such a double standard that they're like calling yes. out Evie Richards for staying in her field for too long, where you got Ellie Easerbeat, who's already won a championship in there, who has
right.
people his same age, even though he's 21, as, you know, Quentin Hermans, who's racing up, who has all these other guys racing up. I'm not questioning it. He can race this, but it's like, don't call out the woman racer who's, you know, not from Belgium or the Netherlands for not moving up, where you're not going to do the same for the Belgium guy. That's
yes.
that was my
right.
only like this.
Completely
this
agree.
Doesn't seem fair.
Should not be that
us
double
if we're
standard.
Coming across as hypersensitive to the women being called out, but
yeah.
just the same, you know, it's the non-Belgian/Dutch racer as much as it is the non-male racer.
Oh, for
that
sure.
we're seeing here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that was a that was an exciting race. Got the day started for us for Sunday, and went on to the main event for Sunday was, of course, the elite men.
Oh,
Bill,
you know,
did
yeah, I
go
got
ahead.
One thing to mention though. I forgot about the women's race.
Yeah,
if you didn't see it, the biggest battle that we didn't mention in that race, was between Sané's family and the security guards behind the podium.
Go ahead, fill us in.
We did hear like about fisticuffs. It. They didn't have, you know, they evidently did not have credentials that made the that passed the muster for the team manager and also the pit crew for Sané Khan to get into the podium, and they were roughed up, like, you know, fat lips and black eyes and stuff. supposedly those same private security guards also roughed up some members of the UCI, and there was somebody else as well. It was like, yeah, a little heavy handed.
They weren't having it, man.
A little heavy handed on the
yeah.
This was the race in Altamont.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Look it up, you youngsters. Look it up, Altamont Speedway.
Yeah, right.
But if you want a state of our world today, you can just go and you know, I know you're not supposed to read the comments, but it's just the comments on the cycling news story for this in support of the guys resorting to punching people because they didn't have the right credentials is something to behold.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, you know, they probably did not give them credentials because they didn't expect her to be on the podium, right?
Yeah,
they didn't
exactly.
expect her
yeah.
for a top
right.
10
yeah.
finish or anything like that. Who knew?
Who knew?
Just such a surprise to be there. That's sarcasm, people. Sarcasm. Send that hate mail to Bill.
Yeah. Feedback at cxairs.com.
Bill, was there any of the email questions that we wanted
yeah,
to cover?
Yeah, let's check out some. We have to answer. We don't have to. I'd like to answer some of Elliot's questions because he emailed us tons of awesome questions last time that we did not get to. First one, just starting out with Lane Maher, and wanting to know if this was a breakout performance. We sort of touched on that, where I think we would all agree that, you know, it, definitely a great performance for him, but also somebody who we see as one of the, if not the top, racer in the U.S. in his field, right? For that,
I was less surprised by Lane's fifth than I was by Ellie Anderson's eighth and by Stephen Hyde's 15th. To be honest,
yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah,
and who would have thought that, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when we pulled his name from the middle of a race sheet because we thought it was cool, and I'm always been a big fan of Better Off Dead, and I said, I just have to point out this guy, Lane Mayer,
and the rest is history.
He turned out to be one of the nicest guys. His dad got in touch with us way back then and said, yeah, he gets it. It's funny, because people were concerned that we were making fun of the guy, and he turns out to be one of the nicest gentleman that we deal with on a regular basis when we're calling these races. So kudos, man. Lane Mayer, you are the man.
Yeah, no, I agree. I had a nice conversation with him at Nationals as well, especially when he was one of the few people I saw who was successfully riding that run-up. Yeah, so it was
a kid that had every reason to pout that did not.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, class act all around.
All right, we talked about Anthony and Simon a bit, but and especially with their obsession with Pidcock. Elliot just points out, which you know we should mention as well, first year in the U23s for Pidcock. So as upset as he was for not, you know, excelling and not winning, he's still got a lot of years ahead of him, even in this category alone.
But I was still a little bit. Richards on her first year in the U23s did okay.
It's true.
I was still a little bit surprised. I expected him to be up at the front pushing, you know, because he's just been so dominant all year long in the U23. So I think it was a bit of a surprise. Even though he was a first year rider, there was a lot of expectations for him to do well. But nothing bad about him not doing it because he is a first year rider. I totally agree. And Worlds, as I've said about the Elite Man, Worlds is like a whole different world, right? Everything changes at Worlds.
That's why they call it Worlds.
That's why they call it Worlds. And trust me, he'll be back.
Yes.
He'll be stronger than ever.
Harriet Harnden will have a sit-down talk with him and get his head straight.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Elliot mentions
that. Oh, that brings us to the next question.
Harriet Harnden as well, and then finally with the pits. Oh, the one thing, you know, he does mention the pit selection playing a role with the women's race, which we talked about. The one thing that I think is worth pointing out for that Elliot does with the women's race is that Sané on that descent, on the long technical descent, a place where I think all of us would say this is going to be Katie Compton's strength, and it wasn't like she was riding that poorly, but that was a place where maturing skills certainly showed, and she was, really just bombing that, if not, putting time between her and Katie on that. And even when she got to the bottom, she was able to ride it, Katie's dismounting and running on that long off camber. Obviously a decision because she thought she was faster doing that, but that was something where Kant was, being able to smoothly ride through.
Yes, agree. I totally agree. At worst, she was just as fast as Katie on that. And like you said, Bill, I would totally agree. That would be a section where we would say Katie's going to have an advantage here, and Kant basically neutralized that advantage at minimum. So, yeah, well done.
Yeah, I think that we got a nice letter from Larry as well. Larry, you made the show, but I think we already talked about your question with the pits and running through the pits. And, we will also give out a shout out to MFG Cyclocross in Seattle, since we get caught talking about stuffy East Coast cyclocross all the time, and now they had a slip and slide as a course feature for their final. Good for you, MFG Cyclocross. I've actually been following that series for years, and I love it. Love it.
But that's say that I don't think we will see a slip and slide in Louisville.
No, nor on the stuffy East Coast.
No, I doubt it.
That's okay.
All right. Well, those were good. Let's move on to the elite men. In first place, we had Wout Van Aert. Second place, Michael Vanthernout. Third place, Matthew Vanderpool. Fourth place, Tone Aerts. Fifth place, Lars Vandehaar. Some redemption for David's pick.
Thank you, Lars.
Man, so tons of stuff to talk about.
Came back in, right?
It did. It did, for sure. For sure. So, you guys, we come in again. Wout gets the third consecutive world championship for him. Basically, he just rode a really smart race. He's like a machine at Worlds. And wins by the largest margin since 1979.
Mm. 2 minutes 13 seconds.
Yes, 2 minutes 13 seconds. That is incredible. So, what do you guys think, Bill? You go ahead.
No, what's I want David to jump in here.
All right, David, go give us some thoughts.
I just think that we've talked about it, and I think I mentioned it earlier today on Bike Shop CX that credit to Amanda Nauman who made the comment that Matthew Vanderpoel manages all the barriers better than Wout, except the mental barrier. And I think we saw that. I think we saw that he had to fight his way, and he got almost back up there, and then he hit the fence. And from then on, each time he fought, he did not get back up the way he felt that he could have or should have. And, of course, I'm deciding all of what he was thinking, telling you what he was thinking. But when he could not get back there, I think that there was that mental breakdown of, I can't do this, and then he just faded. And fading for Matthew Vanderpoel means, you know, top five, top six maybe, whereas fading for the rest of the human population means going off the back. But once, I think at some point we saw in the later rounds, at the last lap or two, where he finally managed to snap out of that self-defeating attitude and clawed his way back to third.
Yeah.
Because
there was a time he was
like, I'm not going to lose to Toon Aerts here. I'm not going to be off the podium.
He definitely put a move in on Tone at the end. It was like, this will not stand. And completely throw in the towel. But I agree with you, David. And I think that that's something that, we've seen for years. And it really, I'm not sure this rivalry is going to last, and it, because these guys are going to do different, go different into different disciplines possibly, but it is reminiscent of Sven Ness and Niels Albert almost to a T at this point, where you would have, if you looked at them as far as ability, they were pretty equal, and and Niels, if he got out there and everything went right for him, it didn't matter about the conditions, he was going to win the race. And he was just that much better. Any little thing starts to go wrong, you know, and there's Sven right on his wheel. He's going to wait for him to make a mistake, and he's just going to take over the race and win the race. And it was just sort of this cold, calculated, always keeping his cool, even if, you know, he crashed or anything went wrong, getting back up, getting back into the race. And I think that there's some really strong parallels there between Wout and Sven. And then Niels and Matthew, which is kind of funny.
And I think that
since Niels is coaching.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, I think
how ironic it is that Niels is his coach, and Niels has, perhaps because he knows and was self-aware enough when he looks back at it, that that was what cost him so many races in the past, and does not let that get to Wout.
I think one of the things that Wout has at Worlds is Niels Albert. You know, he's one of the things with the tires, you know, I mean, running the 30 mil tires with the mountain bike tread that they handmade on the Dugas casings or whatever, whether or not that does
you're gonna
anything.
Steal my thunder. I haven't gotten to do my take yet.
What's your take?
My thunder.
What's your take? Go ahead. Go.
I let David talk.
Go ahead.
It
always
has to come back to me, doesn't it?
I want to hear your take,
Bill. Do you know how the joke goes that they should make the whole plane out of the material they make the black box out of?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Why is it that these magical tires only appear for Worlds? Why isn't he using these magical wheels and this magical tires all season long, Wout Van Aert? Then he'd win everything, because obviously the only reason this guy wins at world championships is because Niels Albert is able to pull out these magical tires. He was able to pull out the magical green tires last year. Yeah. And but for that, Mathieu van der Poel would have won the world championships. And this year he got these skinny 30 millimeter tires. Yep. And if not for that, Mathieu van der Poel, at some point, internet, we have to give Wout van Aert credit for winning the world championship because he is the better racer in these crappy conditions. We saw that last year, and we saw that this year. He was on different tires, and he rode the rest of the year for both of those races, yet, come on! Let's give the guy some credit for winning the world championship without, you know, putting it all, or even now we're here. And I swear that Niels Albert is just messing us with us now with the latest thing, that the secret weapon was the cooking spray.
The cooking spray, of course. Yeah,
that
something is, that American
been doing Pam for is years, what he actually did.
Decades.
He spoke to a woman named Pam, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
She's the one that put together the tires.
That's a 20-year-old secret weapon. It's like,
right.
I swear Niels is just messing with people with that one because they've been using that for years as well. But he needed something to say. But yeah. But my main point is that I think Wout van Aert raced a nearly perfect race. And he, even with crashing and even, you know, having to, and the thing that we saw a lot of riders run into, and he ran into the same trouble, was that there was this tiny little strip of green still left on the track at the high end of some of these areas, and everybody was aiming for those, and you had those metal barriers with the kick out legs, with the slanty legs, and people were running into them because they were trying to get that grip, trying to stay up top and get on that part that was still almost dry, and that there was running trouble. He does that, crashes, still has at that point like a minute lead, is able, you know, he lost like 10 seconds and was able, and it didn't affect him at all. It truly was, you know, a lot of times, and this is kind of the interesting point for me at least, we're so used to seeing van der Poel so far out ahead and then just riding so effortlessly that you just lose interest. I didn't stop watching this race. I didn't lose interest in it for a second, especially because there was a nice battle going on behind, but that aside, it was fun just watching Wout just dominate this course and just ride it better than anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of that too is you're also waiting for van der Poel, right? He's such a threat at all times. You're like, you know, even though Wout's got this lead, you're just waiting for him to come back and start cutting into it. And it just doesn't happen. The lead just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think at Worlds, Wout is just the man. He's got it figured out. He knows how to perform well in that one race. I think, like you, all the stuff you mentioned with Niels, with the little tricks and stuff that he pulls out of his pocket, whether or not they do anything, if nothing else, they make Wout, or they help Wout feel like he's got secret weapons, right? Yeah. He's got something that no one else has. And this is going to, and in your mind, this is going to give you an advantage. This is going to make you better, right? And you can go out and perform at a very high level every single time. Have you guys heard anything with Mathieu van der Poel being sick at all or not feeling great? He just did not look like Mathieu van der Poel.
No, I mean, the only thing, Audrey just kind of insinuated that there was something going on because Wout van Aert was
motoring
breathing
away
out of his nose the whole race.
Oh, God.
And then couldn't understand why people were upset with that comment, even though he said it was unnatural.
Right. But no implication, not implying anything.
No, Audrey being Audrey. I think that the one thing that, is worth talking about, there was one person in this race who was more excited and more happy than Wout van Aert, who won, and that was Michael Van Turnout.
Michael Van Turnout, yeah.
He basically won a world championship as far as he's concerned. That was such a great ride. You know, I was doing an event at the Rafa Papa, but I just noticed, I was like, oh, there's, you know, Vanter now, you know, setting up on the, he was, I think, in the one slot all the way on the side. I was like, oh, that might be good. He might be able to get around and get the hole shot. That guy's, you know, pretty fast when he gets going, and he's really fast off the bike. And, you know, I kind of looked like a genius after that, because there he is leading the race, and the guy can run, you know, I mean, off the bike. He is so fast, but just being able to battle Vanderpool, and it was such, the greatest thing to watch in that battle was Michael Van Turnhout was racing as if he was winning the world championship. Matthew Vanderpool was racing like, I just want this over with.
I just
if
want
I
to get
can't
done.
Win, I can't. And so, you know, they come down the stretch and you could, and Van Turnhout would like, look at Vanderpool and see what, how he was doing. He'd look behind him. He'd look at Vanderpool again. He'd look behind him. He'd back up a little. He was doing, it was like all of the tactics just running through his head like a million miles an hour. And Vanderpool was just like, had his head down, was like, I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. And then finally, you know, the Vanderpool was able to make the move, get around him, get that second place, get it secure. And then Tonerts moves up, and then Vanderpool has to deal with the same thing with another guy who's like, all I want to do is be on the podium, and then he's going to fight him. So, yeah, it was just, it was kind of funny. It was like the, just the different places. Again, you know, as David said, we can't really read what was going on in Vanderpool's mind, but what you could imagine was going through his head versus everybody was like, I'm going to be able to beat him.
I am.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when you think back to when we were all picking our podiums and everyone was picking podiums, you know, everybody, most people had Wout and Matthew 1-2 in whatever order. And then every, you know, we're talking about Tone and Sweek for the third spot on the podium. People picked one of the two. And then you think, well, I think Bill, you might have even said, maybe Michael Van Turnhout has a chance, you know, getting in there for third. He's a name you got to throw in there for that mix for third. And he comes out and gets second. So I don't think anybody had him picked for second, and just an amazing ride, and just to see him be that happy about getting that second place was just awesome. What a great thing.
Worth mentioning too is that there was a lot of especially with Kevin Powell's not being on the team, there's a lot of drama, a lot of he kept the Belgian press busy for a long time discussing the team selection for Belgium and Sven Van Turnhout and his, you know, relationship with Telenet Fedea and how all those guys were on it. And, you know, so this was like a lot of drama before Worlds even happened. I think little vindication for Sven in that every Belgian rider is in the top 11, you know?
Yeah, the lowest Belgian was 11. I'm glad you said that, Bill, because I was thinking and going to say the same thing. I think it's total vindication for that. You know, you were still, would Kevin Powell's have put them in any better situation there? I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you had Tonerts basically fighting for a sweep,
right?
You know, on the podium. So
exactly. So, all right. Well, we haven't gone through the U.S. riders, so let's do that. In 15th place was Stephen Hyde. In 28th place was Kerry Werner. What a great ride for him! And in 38th place was Cody Kaiser. And in 40th was Jack Kisseberth. 42nd, Tobin Ortenblad, and in 44th place, Tristan Cowie, and in 48th place was Jeremy Powers. Thoughts? I think before the men's race, a friend of mine who were watching it with me said, you know, if Hyde can get in the top 20, that is a ride. That's maybe the ride of his career. And here he goes and breaks the top 15. I think it's one of the best rides of the weekend by Stephen Hyde.
I would agree with that. I would think that his training and his acceptance, I think that's a part that we miss from time to time when we were talking about the other Americans that have been going to Europe as part of their season. I think that one of the things I've noticed is with Stephen Hyde, he fits in there. He's hanging with the guys. He's out there riding with Wout and doing training rides when they're not racing. When Jeremy would go over, he was out there alone. Maybe sometimes the other American delegation, but he wasn't inserted into the culture to quite the extent that Stephen Hyde has been. I think that this bodes well for Stephen coming up if he continues to decide to race in Europe.
Yeah, for sure. Bill, what'd you think?
Well, I think also with Hyde, couple interesting things to note. One, he you know, he was up there fifth, sixth place for the first lap or so, had a little mechanical issue and dropped back. And he said, you know, he wasn't really, he didn't, you know, want that to happen, but the disappointment wasn't there because he knew, like, in that group where he was, where he ended up, that's where he should be. Like,
yeah,
he knew that he's not in the same level right now as those guys who are in the top five, which I found kind of interesting for him to be saying. I think it's a good realization that made it possible for him to get the result that he did, which is an amazing result. The one thing that I was saying,
did he realize that the Vanderpool he was battling was not Matthew?
That I don't know. But I will say that the one thing that we like to bash on the UCI, where I give them kudos, and it was really fun to be able to have my phone out during the race while we were commentating on the race and watching the live feed, and everybody always complains about only showing the leaders, to be able to have the live scoring, the live timing available.
That's
pretty
so
awesome.
Nice.
It's so, yes. And we were able to, you know, I was giving constant updates on where, you know, the North American riders were, and Hyde moved up from like 20 something and kept moving up. And it even got it for Marcel Wallhaber. I was like, well, I don't know if he's going to catch him. He's like 10. And then next time there he is in 15th place, you know, moved over from 16th. It was exciting just to be able to follow along. And I am happy that they now have that ability. It really sort of changes the engagement that you can have when following these races.
I completely agree. I've been doing it with the World Cups all season long, and it's just been great. Go ahead, David.
It's like a value that they picked up from NASCAR, in a sense, right? That you can see things. There's your little scroller at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, along with the in-car, the dash cams that they picked up as well. Unfortunately, they decided to put the GoPros on the rear of the bikes in a muddy race, so that really only lasted for about a lap.
Could you imagine being one of those riders that carried that darn camera the whole race and just covered it?
They had one that was... It was like as he switched onto his new bike in the pits, they switched to his rear cam, and he didn't make it out of the pits before you couldn't see anything.
It's just covered in mud.
That was the only view you saw all week, was just the 10 feet from the exchange. You saw the leg go over the bike. You saw four pedal strokes, and then they had to switch cameras because it was already covered in mud.
Yeah.
All right. Well, go ahead, Bill.
You know, we're talking about the Belgians. Lauren Zwick. I think one of these guys who we really thought would be up higher, saw today on Instagram. If you go to his Instagram feed, double flat. And I think he had another flat on top of that, still finished eighth. So that's a pretty impressive ride for him. Rider we'd seen, a young rider, former U23 rider that we were following, Giole Bertolini from Italy. Great result for him in sixth place.
Yep.
The French champion Steve Chanel in 10th place, Moray still up there in 13th place. So yeah, good races for all of them. Where were our Canadian friends? Michael Vanenham, 34.
Tyler Cloutier was on the sidelines.
Tyler Cloutier cheering for his Canadian compatriots from the sidelines. So good that he's still there racing.
Yes, and Vandenham was 34th. And I want to give a shout-out to Gary Milburn from Australia. He's the I think he started, like, last row. He might have been the last person even.
I think he was
close,
the last one in the grid, yeah.
Or close
to
it.
A couple of Japanese riders were behind him in the grid.
Yeah, and moves up to 36. Basically moving up. I mean, you got to be moving up all race to do that. So so he did. So, and 36 is a very good result for him. And it's just kind of cool thinking back all the way back to Jingle Cross, you know, talking to him and chatting with him at the very first World Cup of the season and seeing him have a great season. So awesome. So. Anyone else we want to cover or mention?
No, I think we should. We do need to mention, not the race that he wanted, maybe his last Worlds, but Jeremy Powers announcing before Worlds. I don't think we talked about it last week about
team. I don't think so.
Yeah, about his announcement that his team is no longer going to be together. So that Aspire team is disbanding, RAFA deciding they were no longer going to support that program. So Spencer and Ellen both will be doing something different next year. And Jeremy also would not say he's retiring, but will be racing less and still to be determined what he's going to do. I know Ellen has, and now she is. Don't worry about Ellen Noble. She'll come out of this fine. I think she's just waiting to announce what she's going to do for next year. But I think it will be an exciting future for her. And then we still have to look forward to see where Spencer goes. It should be, I would hope, that another domestic team would pick him up, because he certainly had the results to support that this year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, as we always tell people, when Worlds finishes, it's not the end of cyclocross season, right?
That's right.
So we still have this coming weekend. We have a Deveve race on Saturday and a Super Prestige on Sunday. So we got Lille on Saturday and Hoogstraten on Sunday. So people check those out. And then the following week, we got the last Super Prestige, and that is, of course, Middelkerk. So still a few races to go, and we will talk about them after they happen, right, guys?
Yes. We certainly will.
You'll hear it from us here on.
Here you go. Not even. We don't even have to wait till the weekend. Katie Compton racing tomorrow.
Oh, that's Malaga. What races? Yes. I did see that.
Brico Cross race. Yep. So that's that is happening tomorrow. Maybe if you go to cyclingfans.com, you can find some coverage of that.
Feed. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So that'll be good. And we'll talk about those more as we end up the season. And then, of course, once all that's over, we will have our annual awards show, of course, right?
Yes.
We seem to do that every year.
We got to get those awards out, dust them off, and get them ready for who the recipients for this season. So
did we have a name of our awards?
Like for the an overall name
for the Grammys or the Oscars, or you win a, I don't know if we ever did.
The Toddies or something?
A Toddy.
I think it's got to be some kind of Canadian award.
The Maple Leaf Award.
The Maple Leaf?
the great, there we go. Exactly. So, we'll cover all that. Bill, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do it?
Don't follow me on Twitter.
Many people will get that joke.
Because he won't follow you.
Because he won't follow you.
Instagram.
There we go.
You can follow me on Instagram at CXHairs.
Or email.
Email feedback@cxhairs.com. You can follow my YouTube channel. That would be fun. We've still got some stuff happening over there. That is youtube.com/cxhairs. Or you can just go to crosshairstelevision.com.
There you go.
Yeah.
And David.
Mr. David Palin, at Mr. David Palin on Twitter, at Mr. David Palin on Instagram. And if we are putting up our own show, I believe Scotty D, we were talking about this earlier. We're going to do a YouTube critique podcast, critiquing people's YouTubes and giving them all kinds of critical assessments on everything they do.
Sounds when fun. Is this?
Yeah. I think you should. I think if you point out that they are bougie, that would help too.
Bougie was a good idea. Yeah. We're looking for that one too.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, other than Bike Shop CX, what other shows should people check out? You guys are on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, correct?
Yes, we are. in more ways than one, actually. Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, Slow Ride Podcast, Consummate Athlete. We got to hang out. Who else, Bill? Name a couple more.
Kids Don't Follow. What's up with that? Have you guys been putting out a show recently?
We put out a show. We got some other things lined up. I'm trying to get Super Rookie to come on from Slow Ride Podcast to do a early 90s white guy nerd rap show.
Nice.
So, look forward to that in your feeds in the coming months. But I think the show that I have pushed before that I would ask people to check out is Consummate Athlete. They are, we have a lot of cycling shows. They are still sport, health, fitness related, but have a lot of really good variety in the guests that they get on there, and some great information. So yeah, Peter and Molly do an awesome job. So check out Consummate Athlete. And it, if you're feeling generous, go to wideanglepodium.com and become a member and donate some money. It really does help that we have a ton of shows. We have, you know, over 1 million downloads. I mean, Crosshairs Radio alone has close to 500,000 downloads, and we put a lot of time and effort into that, and it costs us money, not only in our time but also in equipment, in server costs, tons of money for server costs, and as little as $5 a month, you can really make a nice dent into that and make it feasible for us to continue on, because we want to, you know, we're doing some cool things. We've given charitable donations to animal shelters where in places where disasters have affected those communities, and you know, we're also sponsoring Katie Compton, so yeah, you get to be a part of all of that by joining the Wide Angle Podium at wideanglepodium.com.
And it's always more fun when you're part of it. You'll be in on the inside jokes.
Yeah. And it makes us feel good. You know, part of it is just saying thank you, because this is a lot of effort. I've basically been sitting at this desk all day today doing podcast stuff, right? And so when someone just tosses you $5 as in appreciation, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel like what you're doing is appreciated even that much more than just downloading and listening to the show. So thank you to everybody that is already a subscriber. And please, if you got the ability, just toss him $5 a month. We really, really appreciate it. So,
and please, all right, guys, viewers, because Scott, when he's not happy, I'm the guy that has to deal with him. So please,
he is.
My benefit, please, make Scotty D happy. Throw him $5.
All right. And finally, you can get in touch with me, Scott Diedenbach, at BikeShopCX on Instagram, at CyclocrossNet on Twitter, or at BikeShopCX on Twitter as well. And please send us your bike cyclocross tech questions to BikeShopShow@gmail.com. We'll get those answered over there like we did a bunch today. So, all right, guys. Well, I'll see you in a week or so. What do you think? Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
And Bill, we want the sound quality of this show to be just as good as the last one, please.
Send me those files and I'll edit them up. I'm all about the editing. I love editing.
I love last week how you said I guilted you into actually editing the show.
It'll happen again. All right, guys. We'll see ya.
All right.
Talk
later.
Bye.